Alison Morris joining us this morning from the Irish News and Sam McBride from the newsletter. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning again. And Alison, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Alison, what can Mr. Stirling do now? What should he be doing now?
I think what's going to have to happen is he's going to have to be called back in front of the inquiry again just to clarify those comments and to clarify where those instructions were coming
from.
This
is wider than the RHI inquiry, though, isn't it?
It is, but civil servants follow orders, and that's the point, you know, and for them to act unilaterally and something like that would be fairly unthinkable. So at some point, this practice had to begin somewhere. But what I will say is that when most journalists heard this, very few of us were probably as shocked, maybe, as members of the public, because we know in dealing with government departments and government press offices that in a lot of cases they seem to believe that their job is to stop us getting information rather than to assist us in the gathering of information. People probably won't realise in this, but an FOI request that we often joke you have to put the answer before you put it in, because they will use any trick in the book if you don't word it in a certain way or if the question framed in a certain way not to give you the information you're asking for. So what had happened then, coming near, you know, after the legislation was introduced for a few years and we could see this was happening, is you would put in freedom of information requests with multiple questions worded multiple different ways, but all with the aim of getting the same answer to try and stop that. So it almost became like a game of cat and mouse. And so what we have here is, when they have known that journalists were going to be so persistent that they weren't going to let out, you wonder then, did someone say, well, let's just not minute them at all, and that way we won't have to release the information in any way.
And Sam, Sinn Féin this morning, very much through Martin O'Mueller, distancing themselves from this, saying it had nothing to do with them, and indeed Martin O'Mueller making it very clear this morning that if this did happen, they are not happy.
On the face of it, it's certainly a very robust response from Sinn Féin. He is putting the ball, I suppose, back into David Stirling's court. It's really up to him now to either come back and substantiate this or clarify this. He'll be at the inquiry on Tuesday of next week. I think he's just gone to America last night for several days. But this is not going to go away. I mean, he has levelled, I suppose, it would seem, very carefully and very clearly an accusation at two parties. He was very specific about it. He did not say this was a general culture across the civil service under devolution. He referred very specifically to the two big parties. And I cannot believe that was some sort of mistake. He is somebody who has great experience, 40 years of experience in the civil service. He understands the significance of highlighting two parties in a multi-party system. I think that there are two issues here. I think there is the issue of Stormont's very deep culture of secrecy, where, as Alison said, they refused FOI requests. It was like pulling teeth a lot of the time. On that front, I think Sinn Féin do have a point. I think the DUP departments were much, much worse in my experience. They were particularly closed. They frequently broke the law, and they just did not respond within 20 days, as the law says you have to. Sometimes that ran on for years in my experience. Sometimes they come up with harebrained ideas as to why they shouldn't respond to something. But what David Stirling is saying is something slightly different. He's saying that there was this unwritten rule, I suppose, among both parties that they didn't want things written down. And that's a slightly different thing, which is harder to prove, I think, for us.
Yeah, except when you now have Mr. Stirling saying it out loud, we don't need proof, do we? He is the proof.
He's the proof that it happened, I suppose. I suppose the question then is why it was happening. Was this something which the civil service did almost preemptively to please their political masters, or was it something that was spelled out to them? I would be shocked if any minister explicitly said, we don't want minutes taken. But I think you can understand how a culture could develop where it's very clear from the top down that the minister doesn't like FOI, that he doesn't like things recorded, that he makes various comments at various points. There are ways and means in which these things can be communicated. There are also special advisers who, to a certain extent, are the deniable face of the minister. Sometimes they can say things which the minister can say, well, I wasn't aware that happened. But technically, the special adviser is always acting with the minister's authority. So there are lots of ways in which this can happen. And I think the very clear question for Sinn Féin here is that if they're saying this is balderdash, which is what they're saying, was there ever a meeting where a Sinn Féin minister was present where a minute was not taken? And it's a very straightforward thing, because either the minute taker is present or they're not present. One thing saying we didn't ask for it, but was it happening, and did they query why it wasn't happening if it wasn't happening. And that perhaps would clear up some of this as to their knowledge of what was going on in the system.
And I think this is the point, Gareth, you and Money Moore are making, right?
That's exactly right, yes. The previous speaker has just made my point for me. Any meeting I've ever attended, the first thing that's dealt with is previous minutes. If a participant in the second meeting feels that a minute has not been properly recorded or not all of it has been recorded, then that should be raised. And furthermore, very, very often representatives at the meeting will have their own notes. So if a Sinn Féin note taker is there, it should be very easy for him to say, look, this was said or this was not said, and it's not minuted. Why not?
How can we, Alison Morris, how can we as the public, how can the public have any confidence that these civil servants who did do this in the past are capable of standing up to pressure from politicians if they failed in the past? How can we trust them in the future to take minutes of meetings that we should all know about?
Remember, in the future and in the present, we have to trust them more than ever because they're basically running those departments in the absence of ministers at this stage in time. And also, I mean, remember that the executive office and when Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster were in power, they hired someone to positively spin the press that was coming out of that. So there has always been a culture of trying to either prevent the press getting information or trying to sort of positively spin us what is coming out. And a lot of people may not know this, but last year the Department of Health hired someone in a similar position to oversee their media and communications, and that was in the absence of a minister. So someone in the civil service signed off on that post, despite the fact that there was no health minister. So you can see that there is this culture of trying to manage information. And that doesn't mean that we're getting better governance. That just means that there is people who are actively paid quite extreme sums of money in some cases, you know, in excess of £80,000-£90,000 a year, to try and stop the public getting information. And remember, that's your money that's paying their wages as well. And also, we can see that there is always positive spin. I know what Marcia Mueller said about the inquiry, and he did call that inquiry. But we all worked that December leading up to that. We know that Sinn Féin didn't want that inquiry originally. They wanted an internal inquiry, a closed inquiry, and a very quick one. It would be over very quickly. And I think as this inquiry goes on and more and more information starts spilling out, you can see why some parties would have been in favour of a closed inquiry where we couldn't see the proceedings every day and we were only getting snippets of what was being said and report at the end of it rather than this current open and public inquiry that we have now.
Sam McBride, we should probably put this question in this morning. But do you know, through your experience, do you know if minutes were being kept of the regular meetings that would have taken place between the head of the civil service at the time and OFM-DFM, in other words, First and Deputy First Minister? You know, were regular minutes taken between those senior people?
I'm not certain of that. I mean, it would be extraordinary if that wasn't happening. Certainly in OFM-DFM, there were meetings of the, I think it was the departmental board, or I've perhaps got the name wrong, but there was a meeting where the special advisors and the head of the civil service and some of the senior heads of branch would meet regularly, and that was minuted, albeit I think the secondary issue there is that some of these minutes then give you pretty scant information as to what was actually going on, but at least there is a record. This is what was discussed. This is who was present. This is the date of it. I think that there's an issue here for Sinn Féin as well, in that even if we accept Sinn Féin's line, which seems to be very clear that they never asked for this to happen in their name, I don't ever recall Sinn Féin during the 10 years or so that they were in government with the DUP ever coming out and calling for more transparency or pressing for more openness. There were points at which the opposition in the last couple of years were raising this issue in the Assembly. I think there was one point where the DUP and Sinn Féin didn't even turn up to you, give any sort of response to the debate. So this was an issue which we were writing about. They were aware of it. There was a very deep problem which the Information Commissioner at various points was launching probes into. They knew there was an issue, and I think there was an element here that this culture of secrecy suited both parties. They didn't want this coming out. Any of these issues might be embarrassing. So at the very least, I think on Sinn Féin's part, they went along with what was happening. And of course, David Stirling says that it was more than that, that really this was a culture which sprung from something which was at some level a desire of both parties.
I wonder how many people, Alison, when we hear this being said that, look, the majority of people in this country want devolution back, want local government back. I wonder if that continues to be the case as we have this drip of information of you know, if you think about recent weeks and months, the draft agreement that Gregory Campbell said didn't exist, so there was no draft document even. That's what Gregory Campbell was talking about. We then see a document which said draft on it. We can't establish from these parties what the actual course of events was. Sinn Féin says there was no deal. Sinn Féin say there was an agreement, a total deal. The DUP saying there was never an agreement. The DUP saying they were never contemplating an Irish Language Act. Sinn Féin say they agreed an Irish Language Act. And now with this, the head of the civil service and other civil servants complicit in keeping information secret from the public. Why would the public want devolution back if that's how they work?
In one way, we can separate the two issues, the talks process and what was happening in the talks process. Understandably, politicians would like to keep that as close as possible, why that's taken place. Where that fell down, where that deal fell down, was that the DUP had failed to properly prepare their base for what it was they were negotiating and agreeing. We can take that out of it. I mean, the behaviour of the DUP since and the failure of them to get together and come up with, you know, one line on what actually was agreed, rather than us constantly having senior DUP members coming on and all telling us a variety of different things, has not played out very well for that party. But with regards to devolution and whether or not we'll be better off underneath it, under devolution and the direct rule, I don't think that anyone should think that direct rule under the Conservative Party is going to be a good option for us or is going to be a comfortable place to be. But what is very clear is we cannot go back into an assembly that was operating in the same way as the previous one. We did have 10 years of fairly stable, with a few bumps in the road, government, but it didn't deliver that much in ways of legislation. There was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and a lot of showboating, but not a lot of laws were passed, and that's what they are, let's face it, they're legislators. So what we do need is, we don't need a talks process that will lead to some deal that will send people back in because they're afraid their wages are about to get cut. We do need sustainable government, and sustainable government can't be run in a way where the public are treated, because when they treat the press with contempt, it's the public they're treating with contempt. It's not the press generally. We're only there to bring information to the public. And we have seen in recent times a contemptibility for the press where politicians are blaming us on their failings because we're bringing the information to the public and the public are quite rightly reacting angrily to that. And we can't have that, because that is not a sustainable government. That is not a government that anyone wants to live under or facilitate or send your taxes to fund or pay towards, because, you know, this is meant to be Northern Ireland. We're not living in North Korea or Stalinist Russia here. You know, you cannot just say that everything is running fine just because you're not telling the public what's going wrong. That is not a way to run a government.
Alison Morris, Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed.